Truth.
The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmiller, with you on this Tuesday, 17 August 2021. And as promised, I've got Harley Schlanger with us today. Hello, Harley. How are you?
Hi, John. Doing pretty well.
Connections are good. I am in a remote location, as you are in Germany right now. And first question out of the box I have for you, how's the COVID-19 pandemic going in France and in Germany?
Well, in France, it's going fine if you have cow manure to sell. The farmers are spraying it all over the politicians' houses, the chambers of government. The French are not very happy. In Germany, it's somewhat calmed down because the numbers that they're reporting have been somewhat lower. Most of the country has opened up. My kids just started school last week. Don't know how long it'll last, but it's nice to have them out of the house for a change.
Masked or unmasked?
Unmasked. As
really?
Long as the windows are open. Now, in a German winter, that might be a problem, but at the moment, it's not a problem. Actually, this brings up another point, John.
Yeah.
Here we are in the middle of summer in Germany, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. the temperature today was about 50 degrees. The high yesterday was 54. That's Fahrenheit. So somehow global warming has missed this central part of Europe.
Oh, you didn't get the interoffice memo? It's now climate change, so it can go either way. Many people are predicting our cold future, let's say, because temperatures are going to drop. It's always been a cyclical proper issue with Mother Earth here. We have heat, and then we have cold, and that's the way it is, and it will be. But that's not going to stop these people. By the way, before we continue here, let's drop in on Australia for about 24 seconds to hear what they're doing with their dear children in Australia. Mike, go ahead, hit that clip.
I want to stress that to the mums and dads, your children will be well looked after inside when they arrive. They'll be literally ushered. We'll have nurses, we'll have some of the youth command, we'll have some of the young police from the various operations within police there just to guide them through as to where they go. They'll be looked after every moment inside the stadium, and they'll be well cared for. So mums and dads, feel secure. We've got about 24,000 students we're aiming to get through next week. The messages will come out this week, and the opportunity is there, but really you've got to take it, grasp it with both hands. I know if you talk to any of our Olympians, I'll tell you, you just got to grasp opportunity, and this is an opportunity, so don't waste it.
We're liking this to Olympiads, and yeah.
Is that a story about vaccinating children?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And No parents allowed, by the way. Parents are not allowed to accompany their children into the stadium where they plan on injecting en masse. Harley, here in the U.S., we have the enclaves of we're following the science. And what they're doing is demanding that you have vaccine passports. The Oakland Raiders, it's the Vegas Raiders now, football team, is the first NFL team to come out and tell the public that, we're going to have a regular season, but you need to show a vaccination card in order to get into the stadium to watch the game. So what is basically happening here, and the announcement was just made by de Blasio in New York City yesterday that, restaurants are open, but you got to show a vaccination card. Otherwise, you're not going to be allowed in. So,
well, in France, you may know this, but in France, they have police who go table to table at the restaurants and demand that people show the proof of vaccination.
Well, people have had enough of this. The science has been discovered. It's the opposition to their fantasy story about a vaccination, that they did not isolate the virus. How can you make a vaccination if you don't isolate the virus? They came out with an experimental vaccine, and the FDA is still seeking approval. They say that they're close to getting that approval. But according to the powers that be, over 1 billion people have been vaccinated worldwide. Now, 1 billion people, that's a lot of people. But there happens to be, 7.8 billion people on the face of this planet? And they've only got 1 billion shot up, and this has been going on for a year and a half. I'll tell you what's happened here in the U.S. It is absolutely stalled. I've been charting this very carefully, looking at different resources, and the best number that I've come up with is anywhere from 40 to 43% that have been vaccinated. That leaves 60 to, 57% that have not. And amazingly enough, it's the Hispanic and black population in this country that has been injected the least, only 18%. So their tsunami, which they expected to wash over and cleanse us all, I've said this on the air, the giant tsunami, you can see the wave, it's ready to crash on shore, but it's frozen, it's stopped. No more people are getting vaccinated, so we've gone from the cutesy stuff, trying to urge or cajole people by having lotteries or whatever the case may be, win free stuff, get free stuff, whatever. They've gone from that comical inducement to now you're going to have a vaccine mandate if you want to participate in life in the good old US of A.
Well, this is something that we've seen coming for quite a while. The same kind of coercion is being applied to the financial system. At some point in the very near future, even if you have a vaccine passport, you're not going to be able to get a loan at a bank unless you're getting a loan to invest in carbon bonds or some form of the Green New Deal.
Seriously?
Yeah.
My God. They have no shame. They have literally no shame.
John, the Federal Reserve set up a special office on green policy, which is now hiring police to check bank records to see if banks are making loans to companies that have any connection to fossil fuel. And if they do, they're going to be brought in on charges. That's part of the Jerome Powell adherence to the Davos banking policy that was enunciated by Larry Fink of BlackRock and Mark Carney, former head of the Bank of England. Their policy is that unless you have proof that you have reduced carbon, your carbon footprint to nothing, or that you've bought carbon bonds so to take someone else's lower carbon footprint for your own, if you can't show that, you won't get a loan. This is a new form of redlining to shut down physical production. One of the people who funds this is Sir Michael Bloomberg, the former mayor of New York, who has a non-governmental organization calling for an end to the use of coal. Now, in Germany, this is very interesting because the Greens, in the beginning of the summer, the Green Party was slated to replace Merkel. this former gymnast named Baerbock, Annalena Baerbock, was showing way up in the polls. Biden did a promo for her. The Atlantic Council was saying she's the one we need in Germany. And then we had these floods. And everyone said, oh, these floods are due to global warming. No, they're due to the fact that the government has these theories of wild rivers that you're not allowed to dredge waterways because that affects the free flow of fish. And so you have all these tributaries to the rivers that are not dredged and jammed up and killed 190 people and flooded cities. And they try to blame it on global warming, and people are saying that's nonsense. What happened in the major area where that hit, the government did nothing for 24 hours. So farmers came with their tractors and pulled cars out, pulled people out of their homes, cleared roads. And there was a young farmer who was interviewed on television. And he said, how the hell does this fall to farmers? Where's the government? Where was the early warning system? They knew 9 days in advance that heavy rains were coming. And so all of a sudden, the Green Party dropped almost 10% in the polls. Now, the problem is that while the Green Party is the worst, virtually every other party is pro-green because that's the nature of Germany. And they're about to move in on destroying the auto sector, the auto industry. Mm-hmm. Now, I think if they actually go ahead with their plans, that will probably be what triggers a rebellion in Germany, because Germans love their cars and they love being able to drive fast. And these battery operated pregnant roller skates don't quite do it.
Well, they've got another problem as well. While they're moving full steam ahead with electric vehicles and, oh, we just love the solar power, there is one glaring weak link in their plan, and that is storage.
Yeah, no batteries. Way to store.
No way to store this stuff. So
also, John, with the batteries, you need certain kinds of strategic minerals that are somewhat rare, right, that destroy the earth to get to them, and that are not, you're not able to get rid of them. They're much more toxic in the long run than anything that has to do with fossil fuel. And the head of Toyota Motors, whose name is Toyota, he came out with a press conference about 2 months ago saying that the Japanese government's plan will mean that one-third of the present area of Japan where there are highways will have to be converted to battery reloading centers. And the Japanese government started backing away from that. So.
See, Harley, most people don't think about the electric vehicles as being another control mechanism for the green freaks. And yeah, if you refer back to the United Nations plan for America, that we have just cities and interconnected corridors and the rest of the country is off limits to human beings and former property owners. If you think about this, it's where they put their charging stations. If you are going to have electric vehicles and these doggone things only get to maybe 300 miles, whatever, you still have charging time, but you need a charging station. It isn't like you can carry extra batteries because these things are humongous, you know. But when you take a look at this, this is another way to control where people go and how far they go as well.
Well, then you also have Mayor Pete, the head of transportation, who's drafting legislation for taxing the number of miles you drive. You'll be allowed a certain number of miles per month, and if you go over that, you have to pay a tax.
Right.
And they're saying that's how they're going to fund the infrastructure. Well, meanwhile, the so-called infrastructure bill has almost nothing in it. You know, the Republicans are complaining it's so costly. It's $500 billion over 5 years, which won't even cover potholes. So, and by the way, do you know it costs twice as much in the United States to fill a pothole or build a mile of rail as it does anywhere in Europe or in China? 50% more to do that. So, you know, this infrastructure bill is another aspect of the control.
Well, 10 years ago, we needed $3 billion at that time, a decade ago, to take care of infrastructure, roads, bridges. I mean, on a regular basis, you go to some place like Detroit, person killed, part of bridge fell off while he's driving down the thoroughfare. You're exactly right.
We have this in Germany now. There's a city called Wiesbaden, which is near Frankfurt and Mainz, that's where the American troops were centered during the Cold War.
Right.
And there are three bridges across the Main River there, the Rhine and the Main. All three of them have crashed in the last 4 years. One was rebuilt. It took them 5 years to rebuild it. The other one they're saying is going to take 8 years. And now the third one they're saying, well, maybe we can't afford to rebuild it, which means the traffic will be so heavy on the two that will eventually be done that they'll be needed to be rebuilt within another 10 years.
Well, interesting point. How long did it take to build the Golden Gate Bridge during the Depression? They did it in record time. What did it take them? 3 years, I think, to build that bridge?
Something
amazing.
Like that.
Yeah, it's simply amazing. Harley, the control freaks, they're going after everything and everybody in one form or another. And what I wanted to roll around to is these thoughts have been coalescing in my head. We had the 2008 banking crisis. Well, we just inadvertently didn't watch the commercial banks too closely when they started speculating in the real estate market, and we saw the disaster that they created. So you go a few years further, and now we're in the middle of the pandemic here, the COVID-19 pandemic, the fake pandemic. That's been proven. But we're going to follow the science, and we're going to follow the experts that are leading us right into the abyss. And when I see them do these things, now, worldwide, this isn't United States or Canada or Germany or France or England. Worldwide, it was very nicely orchestrated. I got to tip my hat to them because they had everything lined up for this plandemic. And at this point, people's lives were ruined. Their savings were wiped out. I mean, it's horrific how the effect of this has been here just in the U.S., where I can witness it myself. But I thought about this, and I thought, well, wait a minute. What did they do after the 2008 banking crisis? Well, they borrowed a bunch of money and threw it at corporations and businesses and whatever. They were supporting foreign banks and foreign businesses. Their logic was, well, it's too big to ignore this. We can't let it crash. But we should have, but we didn't. But now we're seeing governments, you know, we're talking about the budget deficit. They want $5.5 trillion for this next go around. Well, $1 trillion to them is nothing. We're $200 trillion in debt right now. But if you look at this, the overall game plan for the international gangsters is to run up the debt on all countries. Reason being, their fiat currency freak show has run out of steam. It's reached the end of the road. You cannot devalue the currencies anymore and say that they're worth anything or trade them for anything. So a month after, and we're talking, what, 2019 going into 2020? Oh, it's the Great Reset. What were they talking about, Great Reset? Well, the Great Reset they were talking about was, well, among other things, do away with the physical currencies. We're going to all be in the cloud and live happily ever after, which when they do that, you can imagine there's no more stuffing money under the mattress. No, everything is going to be transparent to everybody, including everybody lining up to empty out your bank accounts, whether it be the IRS, state, it doesn't matter. It's all going to be there. You're not going to be able to touch it because they'll be able to come in and beat you to your own, quote-unquote, money. I hear the music. Let's take a break here. Harley Schlanger is my guest. I always look forward to this. Guy's always got a ton of information. We'll continue after this short break. Stay tuned.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! Huh. For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Are back full steam ahead with villainizing people here in this country, Harley.
John, I'd like to pick up on what you were talking about on this Great Reset, but I have a slightly different view of it, in that I think that what you have to look at is that we're at the end of a 50-year arc of history. I think I sent you the speech I gave the other day, a transcript of it, on the unfortunate role that John Conley was roped into. Did you get a chance to look at that?
Yes, I did. And I was going to roll around to that in the next segment, but go ahead.
Well, we can talk about that later. But what I wanted to say is that it was decided because of the buildup of euro dollars. That is, all the dollars flowing out of the United States to Europe. In the late 60s, the British provoked a crisis where they threatened to assert the right to trade in their dollars for gold. This was the Bretton Woods Agreement. And so they threatened the U.S. that they were going to do that. And so Nixon, supposedly to protect the dollar from speculators, ended the gold reserve system that had been in place since the end of World War II. Now, since that time, we've been under floating exchange rate regimes, which means that the banksters, the speculators, the worst swindlers in the world, the Ponzi scheme operators, have been able to determine the value of our currency and do that through collaboration with the Federal Reserve System and the central bankers. And they thought, for the most part, that was good enough. They deregulated banking. They took away anyone's power to oversee that. But we still had a certain element of sovereignty left in our financial system. And so beginning in the summer of 2019, they started an offensive to change that. Now, this was coming from the fact that after 2008, you're absolutely right what they did. They just did flow of funds to the speculators. And so the debt grew, the value of the dollar was collapsing, the corporations were on life support from the Federal Reserve, and they had a crisis that blew up in August 2019, and it was there at that time at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, the annual Federal Reserve retreat, that they laid out a strategy which they called a regime change in finance. And this was when they first publicly unveiled the Great Reset. But of course, this is what the Davos crowd had been working on since 2015. And what they say is that the regime change is that central banks should not just control the flow of currency and credit, which they do by law, unfortunately, but they now should control spending policy as well, which means governments will have no say over what that is done with the currency that's produced in the name of its people. Now, we know that's a fraud to start with, but now what they're saying is it doesn't matter who you elect to Congress, technocrats working with the central banks will decide what money is spent on, and they're going to spend it entirely on green frauds, you know, windmills, solar parks, things of that sort. And secondly, bailing out the biggest too-big-to-fail financial institutions with no credit going to mom-and-pop stores, to entrepreneurs, to inventors, to high-tech producers, industry, agriculture. Farmers are being squeezed out at higher rates than ever. I know you remember this back in the late 70s when there were farmers marching in Texas.
Yep.
And one of the jokes was that local banks, like the local bank of Lufkin, that every year would make sure that the chicken farmers there would get the credit they needed in the spring, all of a sudden they cut off all the chicken farmers because they were taken over, the local bank, by North Carolina National Bank, NCNB, which eventually was taken over by Bank of America. And I went up there. I was campaigning for Senate that year. I went there and I said, some farmer said to me, you know what NCNB stands for? No credit for nobody.
And why do the bankers need to loan to individuals? They're loaning money to the governments hand over fist.
Well, and more importantly, the governments are no longer controlled by elected bodies.
Right.
You know, the Congress is completely bought and sold. We've seen that increasingly in the recent years. But the idea that you have constituencies that can influence policy, like the famous Frank Capra movies, or Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Goes to Washington, yeah.
Yeah. That, those days are gone. You know, who goes to Washington now? Some know-nothing who's got a big bank account thanks to the corporate cartels. So this Great Reset is coming at us like a locomotive. But here's the problem. They're not getting very far with much of the world. The Russians are refusing to go along with it. There's rebellion against it in France and Germany. The Chinese aren't going to go with it because the starting point is you have to surrender your sovereignty to the banks in order to be creditworthy.
Well,
these countries aren't going to do that.
Well, and Harley, I hope everybody is recognizing what this grand conspiracy theory we've been talking about for all of this time. And that's simply, go ahead, Mike, skip that break. I already walked into it anyhow. Yeah, what we're looking at here, congratulations, here is the beast that just pulled off its mask. We've been talking about the New World Order and their quest for global control for years and years and years. It was the grand laughable conspiracy theory. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, other people have tried to take over the world. Look what happened to them. No, the New World Order has always been the bankers. Always been the bankers.
Well, the bankers, and the other aspect of the bankers is the corporate cartels. During the period between World War I and World War II were called the trusts, you know, where you had corporate cartels that would be allowed to expand into all areas, including finance, raw materials, production. Right. You had the rubber cartels. You had the oil, Standard Oil cartels, the Farben-Krupp cartels in steel. All of these were funded out of an operation at 120 Broadway. Now, this is where when people say, oh, this is all conspiracy. Well, it may be conspiracy theory, but it also happens to be true. And there were investigations of these things in the early 30s. The Pecora Commission investigated the way the big banks, J.P. Morgan, First Citibank, which later became Citibank, and also the Rockefeller Bank, they controlled the utility companies. They determined whether you could get power or not. And when this was exposed in the Congress, there was outrage. And it allowed the Congress to pass the Glass-Steagall Act, which would not allow commercial banks to sell mortgages, take over savings and loans. And that separation of commercial banking and mortgage banking was very important for the development of the United States going into World War II and then after World War II. It was one of the keystones of the growth of the middle class during the 50s and 60s. And what happened? The bankers knew it, so they started a campaign in late 60s to stop the separation of commercial and S&Ls to create something called universal banking. And that's, you know, people can call it, try and demean it by saying it's a conspiracy theory. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's an actual conspiracy that has worked pretty well for the bankers for the last 50 years.
You know, it's interesting, and you're going to love the segue into the article that you wrote here. John F. Kennedy, this guy challenged the Federal Reserve Bank, actually had printed up a competing currency, the difference being, no, it wasn't backed by gold or silver, but it didn't carry interest. $5 billion he ordered, printed up, which it was, and put into circulation, which it did. And that was the competing currency against the Fed. And then we have a dead president killed November 22nd, 1963, here in Dallas, Texas.
John, and that was called Executive Order 11110. And it created a panic among Wall Street people like William McChesney Martin, who was the head of the Fed, called his friends in Britain and said, you've got to talk to Kennedy about this. And they said, we've got to talk to him. You've got to talk to him. And turns out they didn't talk to him except through the barrel of a gun.
Yeah. Well, this is speculation on my part, but I was watching Donald Trump very closely. Here was a guy with a, some might say, an exaggerated ego. He saw problems in the United States, which, to his way of thinking, the economy is job one. Let me get in there and try to fix it. And which he did just that. That's what he was moving on. And I do believe it would have been political suicide to do it in his first term. But in his second term, I looked for him to address the question of the Federal Reserve Bank. And Kennedy did that. He not only questioned it, he gave us a competing currency, and they splattered him all over Dealey Plaza. You know, I've heard all the theories as to why Kennedy was killed. Oh, it was the mafia, because look, the casinos closed down, and well, no, it was a failed coup, and there was they always talk about the who, the what, the where, Dealey Plaza. The book depository, the grassy knoll, the this, the that, but never the question as to why Kennedy was killed, which I always found fascinating. And I had looked for Donald Trump, being the business guy, and especially from New York, he saw it operating for years and years and years, that we don't need a private corporation for profit running our country, and especially at interest. Harley, people don't think about this. They don't think about gold and silver-backed currencies. They don't think of the dollar as being just an exchange for labor and goods. They don't think of it that way. And then they've been set up to believe that, oh, yes, inflation. Well, inflation is in check this year. The Fed Reserve said, a couple of months ago, oh, don't worry. You know, we might have some inflationary problems, but that's going to be temporary.
Transitory inflation was the term they used.
Transitory inflation. Isn't that nice? They probably pay somebody to come up with these terms. But point being is we are going to have, you cannot defy the laws of the universe. You put too much of this garbage out there, it starts to rot and stink. And what happens? Well, the economy slows down. They got too much currency out there chasing too few real things. Well, they don't care about that anymore. Because
John, just to go one step further, they've also defined any money going into physical production or any credit going into physical production as dangerous to the environment. And so they now have a second narrative to back the first narrative. The first narrative is the central bankers know what they're doing and you don't. And as you know, most Americans don't even know that the Federal Reserve is not a government agency, that it's a private central bank.
As well as the CDC, the FDA, and anybody else connected with government. The American people, Harley, do not understand the structure of our current government. And if they did, we'd make the demonstrations in France look like a weekend barbecue.
I think there probably would be some barbecuing going on.
I think so as well. Well, here's the deal. Nobody is going to get any relief from these clowns in the near future because they have all their chips pushed in the middle of the table. They're all in. They cannot back out now. They have revealed themselves, their grand plans, and we're either going to put a stop to it or they win, period. There's no two ways about this. You cannot fix this politically. You cannot fix this until we get back to a form of government based on law, and in this country, it was based on constitutional law. Harley, do you realize what was going on in the U.S. prior to 2008? We were taking a look and pulling apart the federal government and explaining to people exactly why things and the results of moves that the government makes, why they're out there suffering. Now, Harley, we were well on our way, gaining traction on common law courts. Not this administrative boondoggle that gave all the ambulance chasers new high-paying jobs. No. We didn't have that administrative state totally in place. Now it is. And everything that you look at has no basis in the Constitution, which is what this form of government was based on. They even got as bold as calling it a democracy. It's the new democracy, democracy this, democracy that. I got so tired of hearing this. But the fix is in. We're not going to get any relief. They plan on taking this to the nth degree, and we either do something about it, or we're just going to sit around and watch what's left of this country crumble around our feet.
John, let me go back to what happened in 1971 then for a moment, because that was when Lyndon LaRouche put out his forecast in 1969, 1970, that they were going to move to break the relationship of the dollar to gold, set up a floating exchange system, and use that to open the doors for what they called financial liberalization. Now, they sold this to conservatives by saying that, well, liberalization means less government. But there actually were some government agencies back then that were doing necessary things to stop trusts, to stop monopolies, to stop fraud. Right. All of those were shut down in the late 60s, early 70s. And when the British moved this operation to threaten to steal all the gold from the United States in return for these euro dollars, what Nixon could have done was say, well, we're not going to convert them. We're not going to give speculators our gold for those dollars. You're going to have to eat those dollars. Instead, he panicked. And he brought in John Conley as the Treasury Secretary because Nixon was convinced that Conley was a tough, independent Texan who could stand up to the bankers and could make the right decisions. But who did Conley end up working with? The two most important people who were telling Conley what to do were George Shultz, who was born on Wall Street, basically. Shultz has a pedigree going back to the 120 Broadway office, which funded the Nazis and the Bolsheviks. His father was one of the funders, was running operations that were funding the Nazis and the communists in the 20s. The other person that was brought in to control Conley was Paul Volcker, who we all know is the former Fed chair who supposedly stopped inflation by bankrupting the farming sector,
right,
with high interest rates. Now, Volcker and Conley and Shultz were sent in to school John Conley. And the story, the official story, is that John Conley figured out that the dollar was under attack by speculators, so he convinced Nixon, we have to take the dollar off gold to protect the dollar. Now, that's a fairy tale. I'm not even sure Conley believed that, because I talked to Conley during his bankruptcy auction in Houston in the mid-80s, when he lost everything because of the collapse of real estate and oil and everything else in Texas. And he was very depressed, and I asked him about what happened on August 15th, and he cheered up and he said, well, that was my idea. I went and told Nixon we have to do that. And I said, well, I think that was a big mistake. I think the reason you're here in a bankruptcy auction is because you took the dollar off gold. And he said, well, now wait a second. That wasn't really my idea. And then he spilled out the story. He said that it was Shultz and Volcker who convinced him he had to go to Nixon to remove the dollar backing by gold. And when he went to tell Nixon about it on August 13th, Nixon said, did you run this by Shultz? What does Shultz think? And Conley said, yeah, it's his idea. So Nixon said, okay, we'll go with it. So here's how globalists took advantage of the tough persona of John Conley to convince Nixon to do something that Nixon was not really that willing to do, which was to free the dollar from the gold relationship so that speculators could turn it into a commodity. And from that point to the present, we've seen one ratchet after another of increased power to central banks, increased power for speculators, for corporate cartels, and the decline of our real physical economy. And when I told that to Conley, he got very depressed and walked away. But it's absolutely the truth as to what really happened. And the reason it's worth going into is that there are many people today who were convinced that when Trump set up BlackRock to run the original coronavirus relief plan, which was a complete fraud, it was another bailout, he brought in who? Larry Fink of BlackRock, which is the largest asset management company in the world, has something like $13 trillion under management. It used to have only $8 trillion, but since he was able to take it over with Trump's go-ahead, they added $5 trillion to their asset value. And what did they say? They said, we're going with this regime change. And it was sold to conservatives that this was Trump moving against the Fed. Now, I agree with you. I think Trump intended to move against the Fed, but I think he got hornswoggled by people like Mnuchin and others,
right,
who said, well, this is the step to do it. Let's take this away from the Federal Reserve. But what did they do in fact? They gave more power to the Fed. And so I think that's an important lesson. And I hope, you know, I sent my article to Donald Trump. I've been trying to make sure that people around him know the parallels between what happened in 71 and what happened when they ran a regime change against him.
Well, November 22nd, 1963, who was in Kennedy's limo in the front seat?
But John Connally.
John Connally. And they missed him, but do you think that John Connally missed who actually went after and killed Kennedy?
I think he knew exactly.
Yeah, so do I. So we've been living under...
And he cut his deal with them.
Yep. And look, and when? 1981, you said? He was standing there watching all of his assets.
What happened in 83, he and Ben Barnes, or 81, they formed a corporation. And they got involved in real estate and oil and gas. And they, because of Connally's past ties to the Democrats, they got unions and pension funds to give them money. And they ended up being victimized when the SNLs crashed. And then, remember, I think in the mid-80s, there was an oil crash. And Connally owed hundreds of millions of dollars, and he had no assets left.
He wasn't smart enough to follow the cue of the other politicians, put everything into trust, own nothing. They can't take it if it doesn't belong to you. It belongs to the trust.
Isn't that interesting that no one, given how connected Connally was, no one warned him that he shouldn't do this in his own name. He should form LLCs and things of that to handle this so he's not personally liable. At that auction at Hart Galleries in Houston, all of his possessions were being put on sale, his special leather hand-sewn saddles, the gold fireplace equipment, his couch, his leather chairs, all of it was sold off, and some of his friends came together and bought some of them and gave it back to him and gave the money to the creditors. But it was a very sad spectacle, and I think if people get a chance to read my article, and I assume that you'll post that somewhere where people can see it.
It has already been posted. It was posted this morning.
I think if people read it and think about it, they'll realize that, as you said earlier, what we're seeing today is a plan that's been put in motion going back minimally to the end of World War II, when there was a fight between people who wanted to establish some form of gold basis for the dollar, which ironically included the people around Franklin Roosevelt, as opposed to the others who just wanted to give all the power to the fiat money producers. And that fight was won after Kennedy was killed and after Nixon took the dollar off gold. And we've been in a downward spiral since that time.
Well, it was in the movie Oliver Stone's JFK, the walk in the park in Washington, D.C., where...
That's right.
It was described that, well, things were never the same after the Kennedy assassination. It was like we were just walking through La La Land. Nothing seemed real anymore. And how true a statement that was. I want to roll around here, Harley, to Afghanistan. We've got less than 15 minutes left in the program. Interesting timing on this, by the way. COVID pandemic frozen in the United States. Many other things going on. 30,000 troops that people don't even know that were shipped over to Taiwan, and they're sitting there right now, which the Chinese government, it's going to be interesting to see what they do about that. But our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the embassy. Oh, our embassy is under threat. Wasn't our embassy under threat before?
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton, remember the infamous video that caused that embassy to be stormed, when in actuality what that was taking the arms from Syria and repositioning them throughout the Middle East. Now we discover that, well, we got the same kind of problem now in Afghanistan, but there's some bright spots, especially for the Taliban. They get to take the $3 billion that was left in military hardware, and it now belongs to them. They put out the story that, well, they're shipping arms into Pakistan now. Oh, and the Taliban is shipping arms into Iran. This is setting up the next move, I believe, in the Middle East. When, excuse me, who is examining the reasons why we went into the Middle East in the first place? It's all been proven to be outright lies. And by the way, your Bretton Woods agreement, we weren't happy with a few countries over there because they didn't want to touch our toxic currency. They said, yeah, you can buy our oil. We want gold for it.
Now, this is exactly right. Iraq and Libya in particular were talking with other countries about moving to some kind of gold pegged to a currency that would be used for oil trading. And the Russians were involved in this. The Chinese were on the periphery. They weren't really fully involved in it. But this is why the hit list was made up, which included Iraq, Libya, Yemen. I think there were seven or eight countries, according to Wesley Clark, that were targeted for regime change. Now, on Afghanistan, there are two points I think that should be made. You made one of them. There's no way that sending in more troops would have been any different than what we had for the last 20 years. So the question is, what were we doing for 20 years? What was the policy? I think there are two things we have to look at more closely. One was opium production and the doping of China and Russia and Europe that was coming out of Afghanistan. And secondly, the other part of this is the continuation of the great game, the British policy from the 19th century of using Afghanistan as a leverage point for creating confrontations throughout Eurasia. Why? Because they never wanted Russia, China, and India to work together. And that was the British intent in launching World War I, launching the Crimean War in the 1850s, on and on and on. And, you know, what, if you think about it, and I'm sure you know the history, and I'm sure a lot of your listeners do too, the United States didn't just get involved in 2001 after 9/11. We helped create the Taliban and al-Qaeda to fight the Russians in the 1980s.
That's right.
So we helped to create them. And then they said, okay, now that we're in power, what are you going to do? And we said, well, good luck. And we left them with weapons then and other things then. And they ended up becoming a despotic regime that caused problems on 9/11. Although Afghanistan wasn't the location of those problems. The location of those problems was Saudi Arabia and probably Israel, which have been in collusion since at least the 1990s. So it's our geopolitical thinking that caused the problem. And I'll say one thing about Biden.
Yeah, go ahead.
As much as I look at Biden and say, how the hell did we ever end up with this guy in the White House? And I know how we ended up with him. I think what he said in his press conference yesterday was true. There is no choice except to get out of there. And that's what Trump was saying all these years. Now that Trump is turning around saying he would have done it better than Biden. He made the deal with Taliban in February 2019. There's no way out of that without taking out U.S. troops. The question is, what do you do then? Do you just turn and run, or do you try and figure out, is there some way we can salvage this situation? And no one's talking about that. Everyone's talking about what a catastrophe it is. Well, the last 20 years have been catastrophic. It's crocodile tears.
I can tell you one thing, one group that's not happy, and that's the CIA, because you know what the Taliban is going to do. They're going to shut down the opium production. They said that before.
They had a press conference today and said that's what they're going to do.
I'll be darned. I didn't even see that. I didn't hear anything about it. I just remember years ago what the Taliban said one of their goals was. And now what's the CIA going to do for their drugs for guns or whatever? We cut off their cash flow.
They'll have to buy marijuana from entrepreneurs in California.
Yeah. Well, we keep having problems with these embassies. We know what's coming. I remember very clearly Saigon, the American embassy there, the airlifts using helicopters off its roof, and watching at the time $250,000 Hueys being pushed off his ships into the ocean. Now, due to inflation, probably 4 to 5 million. But here again, we had problems. We saw this coming. We knew what we were going to do. We didn't secure the arms over there, billions of dollars worth of arms. We just made an absolute debacle of this withdrawal. I don't know who the strategic planners were on this, but either they were drunk or they were high, or no planning actually took place.
Well, here's what I think we need. We do need an investigation immediately of the intelligence failure, and not just the intelligence failure with the retreat from Afghanistan, but the intelligence failures for the last 15 years telling us we're winning, we're making progress, the Afghan security forces are strong, and so on. And secondly, we need a full investigation of who's pulling the strings on the Great Reset and what they're doing with it. And look to other countries around the world that are opposed to the Green New Deal and opposed to the Great Reset. We actually have a possibility. If we rally the people who supported Donald Trump in 2016, to get them to understand that Russia and China are not our enemies, our enemies are the anti-sovereignty crowd in Washington, New York City, and London, and that we can form alliances with other countries, not that we love them or support what they're doing, but they have similar interests. And that's something that Trump did understand, the idea that we want sovereignty for every country. So I think that it's, you know, when you see a crash like this, it's an opportunity to show who did it and why, what their intent was, and why we don't need them anymore. This whole intelligence community has to be thrown out.
By the way, the World Health Organization has made a statement on Afghanistan. They said the fall of the government there could provoke the spread of COVID-19. Harley, I'm telling you, this is spirit breaking. This is bank breaking. The goal was to split up this nuclear family. They did it in 2008. We were still reeling from that, trying to patch ourselves back together. Then we had the great plandemic here. I refer you to Event 201. If people haven't seen that, look it up. Watch it. They had the grand plan for the Great Reset and everything else. We are in extremely perilous times, but the New World Order is salivating right now because, as I said earlier at the top of the show, they've got all their chips pushed in the middle. They have revealed their plans. We know what they're up to and how they're going to do it. It's just a matter of how do we garner the support to stop this.
Got to keep talking.
Been doing it for 33 years, haven't taken a break behind a microphone. We need the successive generations to know what we know, and them to be true warriors and keep up the fight for freedom.
John, you and I need a youth movement behind us.
You got that right. All right, Harley, that's the end of the program. I hear the bump music. I appreciate it very much. I always look forward to talking with you.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right, sir. Thank you. All right, we'll take the break. Second hour of the National Intel Report coming up. I'm in a remote location behind or down in a basement someplace. Oh, wait a minute. There goes Joe Biden. Joe, what are you doing here? We'll be back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner.
owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.